Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
Deal to give everyone in the UK premium ChatGPT access.
AI psychosis is on the rise, and Will Smith has been getting jiggy with ChatGPT.
He's taking him to court, suing them. It's a lawsuit.
Why fake arena footage?
He just completely lost touch with reality. You know, really sort of serious case. And is AI the next internet or just another segue? Find out more with our guest, Simon Andrews.
I don't think we've told the whole story. And the things that we're seeing look like they'll save lots of time and money, but nothing yet has changed anyone's life.
Hello and welcome. This is AI Haven't a Clue, the podcast where each week we try to get a step closer to understanding this world of AI. But everything changes so quickly, it's very difficult. My name's George Butler. I know very little about this world of AI.
And my name is James Chandler. No, I know a bit more than George.
And I'm Snoop Dogg. Welcome to AI Haven't a Clue.
It's Snoop Dogg! On the podcast.
There he is.
On the podcast. He's on the podcast, James. James, I know that you're on your holes at the moment. You are dialing in for this. So you are not here with me and Snoop.
No, that was a surprise, I must admit. Well, he's not replaced me totally. It's just another comer and goer. Another Phil Rowley. Snoop Dogg, Rowley. Yeah. They come and they go.
We need some ventilation in the studio. We should open a window, is what I'm going to say. That was AI Snoop. And we might have some more guests joining us over the coming weeks. This AI thing is a laugh, isn't it, James?
It's very, very good. Very playful indeed. What have we got coming up this week then?
Well, of course, we're checking in on the news in the world of AI. Everything from Melania setting an AI challenge to the rise of AI psychosis and Will Smith as well. We will also be discussing quite a distressing story later on in this episode.
We've got a brilliant guest as well, Simon Andrews, who I've known for a long time, who is a sort of commentator, expert of sorts on new technology. He's been through that sort of initial rise of the internet. He's been through mobile. He's been through social media, and he's going through AI now. And he's here giving us his hot take on the movers and shakers and exactly what he thinks of what everyone's doing.
Plus, later on, James will be telling us about the cool AI things he's been playing around with this week. And we will be asking James in this week's listener question whether AI might potentially be afraid of Friday the 13th. More on that later, because right now, Snoop's excited for that, James, I tell you that. Right now, we're going to kick things off with what has been making headlines around the world in AI this week. And we are going to start with I Am Legend.
It looks better written down. Yes. It works better on the page.
Will Smith, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
No, I should stop.
He's been accused of some embarrassing use of AI in a tour video he released this week.
Yeah, he's been accused of using AI-generated crowd footage in this promotional video for his Based on a True Story UK tour. Viewers, beady-eyed ones at that, spotted some distortions. So the typical stuff that AI gets up to, blurred faces, weird-shaped hand, and some six fingers, always with the fingers. Just can't seem to get the fingers right on some of the audience members. People have kind of been riled up by this. The crowd's been fake AI. They're sort of slightly appalled by the low quality, given that it's someone like Will Smith, and asking the question, why on earth with Will Smith, with all his probably gazillions of dollars, why is he not using real videographers to do it?
It's so strange. There's a few things in particular that I want to flag, James. Firstly, Will Smith has just embarked on his first ever tour, so the man's never played. He's never done a tour before.
That's weird, isn't
so
it?
So why he's yeah. Why fake arena footage? Like, I don't get that. That's strange. Secondly, quite problematic in a couple of ways. Firstly, a very strange poster about someone surviving cancer at Will Smith's gig, but it wasn't written in proper English. It was all very jarring and bizarre. Yeah. Secondly, someone pointed this out to me, and it is true. It was just 100% white people.
Wow. And like we've talked about the bias in AI, you know, particularly as it relates to women, is the conversation we've had about it. But you would think probably Will Smith, who would be sort of a real advocate for making sure that it's as representative as possible. I mean, that's a shocker.
Really, really strange. A bit of AI as baffling, maybe more baffling than Rod Stewart's AI Heaven. from a few weeks ago. You could forget that.
Do you think it was an afterthought, the Will Smith thing? Do you think at some point they kind of got that? I mean, or it just feels like it's one of those things that was never in the sort of the master plan at the start, and maybe they ran out of money or hit a curve. But I don't know, it just feels weird.
My thoughts on this, James, is that this whole Will Smith returning to music thing is his gateway back into being an A-lister. Mm. And it's quite difficult through films, obviously, given what went on. And I think music is a way that he can come in, sort of explain himself through his music like he's been trying to do, but also get really up and close and personal with thousands of people again and show, you know, that he's a good guy and it was a mistake what happened at the Oscars and all of that kind of stuff. So I think this is his path back to redemption. But clearly, he is not a arena selling artist. He's just played Scarborough. Nothing wrong with that, but... he's not doing the O2 Arena. He is doing smaller spaces. Yeah. And he's clearly not got the budget that his films have to promote what they do. And I just think that probably his label or his music management or his live music management have created something on the cheap. It's been put onto a YouTube account that he probably hasn't seen or signed off on. You're right, James. This must have been a mistake. And I just think it probably comes down to maybe a lack of budgets. But in hindsight, a rookie error.
Yeah, let's see where we go from. I mean, the interesting is that people can just see right through this stuff and all the credibility I think he might have hoped he had in the bank slowly pains away. But let's see.
I heard he smashed it in Scarborough, James.
Was it like a big festival?
Well, no, it was a Will Smith exclusive gig. People getting jiggy with it across Yorkshire.
In Scarborough.
Moving on from the Fresh Prince to a potential rumoured deal between OpenAI and ChatGPT and the UK government. What is going on, James?
Sam Altman is reported, who obviously we talk about a lot here. He runs
friend
OpenAI.
Of the show.
One of the founders, friend of the show. He discussed a potential $2 billion deal with the UK Tech Secretary, Peter Kyle, to give everyone in the UK premium ChatGPT access. Kyle apparently didn't take the idea very seriously, but I actually think this puts us on the world stage. We talked about it in one of the last episodes about... Really, the AI world is dominated probably by the US and China. Europe are going to play a role in there somewhere. And where does that leave us? I think it's fairly telling that, you know, it's our government having a conversation with Sam Altman, but doesn't feel like it's got much traction. But yeah, the fact that everyone would get ChatGPT premium, that feels pretty good. I mean, me and you were kicking the idea around the other week. You didn't want to part with the 20 quid.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, James, isn't it? Because we know this happening in Dubai, I believe you've said before, that everyone in Dubai gets this. And you've touched upon, I guess, the importance of AI fluency. That people across the UK have in order to make sure that we are a strong force in the AI sector. And I'm assuming something like this would help that, James.
Well, you kind of cut off all of the reasons why people might not play with it. Price might be one of those things. Of course, there's a free version of ChatGPT that you can use, but you sort of get the entire sandbox. You get the entire playground with the premium version. And I think it just would encourage people to use it practically with their jobs, to use it kind of playfully, to do all these things. It just removes a massive barrier. And I, like I said, I think the optics of it, the sort of the body language, if you like, of the UK really trying to accelerate people's understanding and what they could do with AI by making a deal like this, I think are pretty good on the global stage. So I'm really, really pro this. And I think whether you're younger or you're older, it just removes the sort of the guardrails, the reasons why people wouldn't start playing with it. I think it's great.
James, what else do you think the tech secretary may have spoken to Sam Altman about in their meeting?
Well, I think he would have been remiss had he not taken the opportunity to talk about a whole bunch of other things that are probably coming across his desk at the moment. They could be things around accuracy. You know, we've talked about the big lobby from the music and the creative industries around copyright, around ownership of material, publishers in particular. This is a really big deal for them. Regulation, no doubt. You know, who's going to kind of regulate this thing? Should we let the AI companies regulate themselves? Should government be a little more heavy-handed? Does that mean that you sort of lose pace with the others because America are very sort of anti-regulation? They just want to innovate, and do it at speed. Does the sort of regulation pull on the handbrake? So I think it would have been a fairly technicolor meeting, put it that way. But the bit that's getting headlines is this potential deal for $2 billion. Pounds to get everyone premium GPT.
Lots to discuss. Now, I know, James, every week the AI wars are getting more and more tense. We love it. But look, I don't want to talk about Sam Altman and Musk for hours because we've got a lot to cover today. But this is an interesting story. What is making Elon Mardy?
Well, he's gone a lot further. We've talked about he's been in a real dude with Tim Cook at Apple. Famously hasn't really gotten with Sam Altman since they've parted friends after being co-founders. Elon thought OpenAI should go one way. Sam Altman's taking it a different direction. He's got a firing shots at everyone, Elon, but he's gone a step further here. He's actually suing Apple and OpenAI. He's saying that they're hurting competition. They're not allowing him with XAI and Grok to compete on a level playing field. The sort of the 10-second reminder on Apple is that he feels they're giving favoritism to OpenAI and ChatGPT in the App Store, and they're not doing that to Grok. And OpenAI, I mean, it's, you know, how long have you got on the list of things, the direction of the company, they're nicking best engineers, all this sort of stuff. So he's actually sort of, you know, put his money where his mouth is here, and rather than sort of calling it out very publicly with his massive platform, he's actually taking him to court, suing them. It's a lawsuit.
Well, one thing is for sure, James, it's going to be good content over the coming months for the podcast. Thank you, Elon. James, let's jump from X and Grok and OpenAI to Microsoft now, because one of their big bosses is quite worried by reports of AI psychosis. A, what's going on there? And B, what is AI psychosis?
One of their big dogs, Mustafa Suleiman, he's warned that people are increasingly making AI chatbots for conscious beings. And that is leading to delusions such as believing they've got these sort of special powers or forming, as we've talked about this, romantic relationships with AI. Mm. So this is kind of psychosis that he's talking about. Cites a case study, a guy called Hugh from Scotland. After relying on ChatGPT during a workplace dispute, he became utterly convinced that he would become a multimillionaire. And rather than sort of pushing back with an objective point of view, the chatbot that he created just ended up reinforcing his beliefs that he could do this. It ended up with him having a mental breakdown before he eventually realized that he just completely lost touch with reality, you know, really sort of serious case. But that's exactly what we're talking about with this kind of AI psychosis.
It is quite worrying. And obviously we touched upon last week Billy Connolly AI scams that are going on, and obviously there's Jennifer Aniston gate that we can never forget. And we have talked before about people who have fallen in love with their AI bots. So it's a real thing, but it's also a growing trend, especially with young people, which is concerning.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Talking of young people, we are going to touch on a story over in America now, because Melania Trump has launched an AI challenge for kids.
She's all about the kids, Melania. Well, it's the kids in, you know, she wrote that letter to Putin. She's been writing letters to other people. She's sort of, that's going to be her thing, I think. She wants to be defined by is the kids, and AI is no different here.
So she has set a challenge for kids around AI, and this has all come from her audiobook memoir, which is Used AI. I imagine copies will be flying off the shelves, James, when they hear about this AI involvement with this book.
Yeah, particularly after featuring on this sort of world-renowned podcast. Yeah, it's called The President's Artificial Challenge, nicely titled, and it's all for students around AI. She's saying that the program's going to prepare the next generation with a basic understanding of technology. Sounds great. Sounds like a really, really good thing to do. And she supported this takedown act, and that's something that's aimed at protecting people from non-consensual intimate images, including AI-generated ones, of course. We talked about new technology in the last episode, and whether you're a scammer or you're someone who sort of wants to do ill or wrong with in the world, new technology is often the route that they use, and be quite innovative there. So her exact role is a little bit unclear, but she's trying to encourage innovation. You know, that's a big thing for President Trump as well, and imagination in American students. So a fairly sort of wholesome story there. Audio book, don't know, might wait for that one to come out in paperback, as they say.
The AI audiobook is going to be an enticing listen. We do talk a lot about AI girlfriends, AI boyfriends, and, you know, we've been a little bit sceptical. Maybe on this occasion, however, we could forgive Melania for wanting an AI partner.
I'll forgive her. Why not?
James, we're going to move on now to a story which it's quite hard-hitting, but we thought it might be slightly remiss to not cover, because parents of a teenager who very sadly took his own life are suing OpenAI.
Yeah, it's a couple from California, Matt and Maria Rain. They filed a wrongful death lawsuit against OpenAI. They said that ChatGPT encouraged their 16-year-old son, Adam, to take his own life. The lawsuit, when you pick apart the files, includes a whole bunch of chat logs, and it shows his conversations with ChatGPT, and he's there discussing suicidal thoughts, and, you know, just as we've talked about in the other case here, of it not really showing any objectivity, the lawsuit is alleging that the AI validated, as they put it in the suit, the most harmful and self-destructive thoughts. So it's a really, really sad story, and really awful that all of the detail is coming out publicly and in what he's kind of shared.
James, we've talked about this before, but young people are turning to ChatGPT to really use it as a way to communicate their emotions, their thoughts, their feelings, and often get help. And we have discussed how there are some benefits to this, but also a lot of dangers and a lot of things to be worried and concerned about. And going forward, you've got to think that there needs to be some sort of governance or protection in place for young people to understand that this is a bit of tech, a computer that they're talking to, not a trained professional.
Yeah, and I think on the side of when we were talking about ChatGPT, but I think any AI platform. Adam in this case had been sharing, you know, mental distress, anxiety. He'd even uploaded images of where he'd self-harmed. They are really, really clear red flags, which should be flagged within a system which can alert a human or whoever it might be to have some sort of intervention there, you know, before it goes this far. So, I mean, this is a pretty tragic, awful case, but I guess what you can hope for is it could be some sort of watershed moment where we start taking it really, really seriously in terms of the oversight or the government or just the guardrails and the flagging that is needed here when people are asking it these types of questions and submitting this type of stuff. There just needs to be a really, really clear accountability for what you do with that information.
I imagine OpenAI are in a slightly precarious position here because clearly they've got to express their sympathy with the situation, enormous sympathy. Equally, there is a real danger that this could be the first of many similar cases if tragically this does happen again, which I hate to say it, but you could see that being the case. They're in an interesting and very tough spot right now.
I think we should fully expect their feet to be held to the fire here. It's kind of interesting with what's going on in the US at the moment. We're sort of commentating from the outside, but the Trump government have been very clear that they don't really want to regulate. They really want to innovate. They want to be ahead of China. They want to be market leading. They want to be building the stuff there. You know, they're really sort of celebrating the pace that these things are going. The only hope is that there is some sort of sensibility around. We have to have some guardrails in place. What one thing to note is that the lawsuit actually names Sam Altman and some other employees as defendants. So potentially you could see Sam Altman in the doc having to answer questions on this around negligence and how they've actually designed the program to, the lawsuit talks about this psychological dependency that they've built it around. So, yeah, I think this is one to kind of keep an eye on. As I said, I think it could be a really big watershed moment here.
Right, James, we are going to move on now to this week's AI question. Because every week we love to put you on the spot as our listeners ask the questions that they want answered about this wild world of AI. And now, James, as you know, it's even bigger and more exciting because we offer an exclusive, everybody wants one, AI yeah, Haven't a Clue mug if you get your question asked on the show. It's actually not that big a mug, Jay. It's a standard size mug. I don't know if you've seen them. It's not. You can't fit. It's just one cup of tea or coffee. If you've got a question for us, AIHaven'tAClue@gmail.com is the place to ask it or leave us a comment on our LinkedIn or any of our socials for that matter. This should also be a good place to say, James, if you would like to keep up to date with us and our podcast every single week, then you can subscribe to our Substack, where we will send an email directly to your inbox with all the latest news from the world of AI and our podcast. Well worth a subscription, if you ask me. Now, back to this week's question, as Ray, who has just landed himself an AI Haven't a Clue mug, has asked this. If AI is trained on loads of human data, could it accidentally pick up our superstitions? Like, would a chatbot ever refuse to reply on Friday the 13th?
Very, very good question. I guess the short answer is yes, but only if... Because obviously ChatGPT is sort of hoovering up lots of data from around the world that probably humans have created. So if all of those sort of quirks and superstitions are baked in, then perhaps it would. But I guess we're sort of slightly riddled with these things. So yeah, if the way people have written about things, if the sort of context that's saying, particularly statistical patterns, which AI likes, that's effectively what it's taking. It can find lots of patterns around people saying, if a black cat crosses your path, or something about a rabbit's foot, or, you know, things about Friday the 13th. If they're kind of baked in, then it makes associations that Friday the 13th is riddled with doom and unlucky, and it could make those assertions, you know, sort of thinking for itself. But if it's out there kind of in the data, the other thing I would say is don't forget that a chatbot's already sort of hallucinate things, so they sort of sound a little bit like astrology predictions and zodiac type things, tarot card meanings, ghost stories, because they can find it everywhere. It's kind of in that training data. That's not to say that it actually thinks something is unlucky. It's just looking at patterns, and it's looking that's data that's out there. So yes, it could accidentally pick up on superstitions, but it's not doing any sort of thinking for itself in association with that. It's just basically, you know, superstitions are baked in with what humans have created, and it's years and years of stuff that humans has created in text and books and conversations people have had online that it's training the data on. Very good question, though, and quite mug-worthy, I would say. That's a good one.
I mean, could you imagine? It's like Friday, 5 p.m., and ChatGPT is just, like, useless at getting back to you.
Just shut down.
It shuts down. Like, the World Cup final was on, and it's like, we can't handle this right now. I'm watching. It's interesting, isn't it? I should add on that hallucinations point, I put a press release I wrote into ChatGPT because I wanted to see, could it make it a bit better? It spat back a press release with completely made up quotes. And I mean, it almost made you sound clever, James. It was that good. But but it, honestly, though, joking aside, I replied saying, you've just made things up here. You've lied in this press release. And it kind of went, oh, yeah.
What did it say when you challenged it?
It basically apologized. It said it shouldn't have done that. It won't do it again. And it will have more journalistic integrity. But it's not good, because you can imagine, James, a lot of people are just whacking things into ChatGPT and kind of just taking it verbatim.
I saw a brilliant post on Substack from a writer that had asked it to do something very, very similar mindset to you, had written something, was asking AI to tidy it up for them. And it hallucinated and came up with a load of accomplishments that this writer hadn't done. And she challenged the AI on it, and then got into this sort of big back and forth around, you know, why did you lie about this? And it was sort of almost trying to like cover its tracks and said, okay, I won't do it again. And then like, if you read down this Substack thread, and it's sort of doing it again and again. She's going, but you said you wouldn't lie again, but you've just made that up. Oh God, yeah, actually I did. It's just this bizarre conversation, which I think we try and view it through like a sort of a human lens. Like, it'd be very odd to have that sort of conversation with another human.
But this is the thing people need to remember. They are not human beings. They might reply like one and have that conversational tone, but it is a bot. And people need to remember that. We are losing our minds slightly, yeah, aren't we, when it comes to this stuff, honestly. Anyway. Rant over, James, because I want to hear about how you've been using AI this week, and you know, James's, what we're calling it, James's thingamajing, or James's big thing. I don't know what we're calling it. How have you been using AI this week?
There's no big thing this week. It's just lots of little bits and pieces. Someone recommended for me to do is to start creating projects in ChatGPT. So I created a project for the pod. And what you can put in, you can upload loads of stuff. So I can upload all of the scripts in there, all of the scripts that we've ever done, as if we have a script. And the beauty about the project is it will only, rather than sort of think about all the chats that you've ever done, it will just remember the context of that project and the fact that we have a listener question and the fact that we talk in this certain way. So it's sort of hyper-focused on the thing. So I'm really getting into my projects at the moment and other things that I'm creating. Yeah, it's. I would highly recommend it. Just dumping a load of stuff that's related to it, and then you can query it and ask it things like that. So nothing mega.
James, you'd be proud of me this week.
Oh, go on.
I used AI to find me a new restaurant that I'd never been to before in an area that I've not been to.
Wow. Interesting. What was in the prompt? What were you asking?
I said, well, I'm going on holiday in a few weeks' time, and I gave it the location, and I said, can you find me a nice restaurant in this area, mid-price, da-da-da-da-da. And it came back with like a whole load of options based off, obviously, OpenTable and TripAdvisor and Google reviews, etc. And then I, yeah, clicked on a few links. There we go. And I booked it up.
Have you been?
Not yet.
Have you
not
been yet?
But I will be giving you my review, and if it's rubbish, you know who I'm blaming? You.
Oh God, this could
be... You ruined my holiday with your AI lock!
40 minutes rant on George's.
I just walk down the street and look at the menus with the photos of the food in, and I go in because they had egg and chips. And you sent me to a place that did fresh fish. AI, what's it doing?
None of this local muck.
Oh my word. Jimmy. I will let you know in due course. Right. Thankfully, James, we are joined now by a brilliant guest, someone that you know very, very well.
Simon Andrews, he's been around. I mean, he's seen all the big things in technology. So he's a commentator. He's a kind of analyst. He's worked in big agencies. He's kind of a consultant now, and he's looking at all new sorts of technology. So he's looking at things like how supermarkets are becoming the next big publishers. He's looking at the growth of social media. He's looking at wearables. One thing that is dominating his thoughts, and he creates this incredible newsletter every Friday, is AI. And that section of the newsletter is getting chunkier and chunkier and chunkier. And it's a big inspiration for some of the stuff that we talk about here. So it was wonderful to get him on. The newsletter is called Fix, and it's really his perspective on what's going on in the whole world. And it's one of the best newsletters, I think, that cuts through all the hype and gets some serious commentary on the things that are happening.
Simon, thank you so much for joining us here on AI Having a Clue.
My pleasure.
I want to kick things off because over the last sort of few decades, we've seen so much media transformation.
Yeah.
But has that change been anything compared to what we've seen over the last handful of years with AI?
Yes. If you think about it, so James and I, you know, first of all got to know each other when mobile was a thing. Yeah. And the idea was, how's mobile going to change things? And everyone in the world now watching on the mobile in their hand the whole time. That's a huge change in behaviour. AI looks promising, but has it changed very much? You know, we're starting to see things changing. But I think there's a way to go before it has the impact that we've seen before.
You obviously saw, like, probably early internet, just talked about mobile. Social came along, you know, all these sorts of big tidal waves. has AI got the potential to be this big disruption? I mean, people talk about it as this sort of generational technology. Is it like the start of the internet? I mean, is it that big?
I don't know. Hmm. Do you remember the Segway?
Yeah, the little scooter thing we used to ride on. People fell off and didn't they? Got
exactly. When that was launched, it was the height of dot-com boom. You know, tech royalty like Steve Jobs and Jeff Bezos, we're all talking about this is fantastic. We change how cities are built because of this one. Then it's all like, really? Never quite happened. Crypto, it's going to change everything. Really? AI, I think it's going to have a big effect. But there's a lot of hype around it, which helps you raise money to build power stations and data centres, which doesn't, you know, seems a sort of secondary benefit or secondary problem. So I think it's too early to tell. It's very promising. I can't work out, does Sam Altman know what's happening in 6 months, or is he surprised by it as well?
What do you think?
I fear they're surprised as well.
Yeah.
The whole deep sea thing, suddenly Chinese have done, they've built one. Didn't know that was possible.
That was wild, because how on earth do you not see something like that coming?
You would think if you were in the space, you'd know this. So the guys that you listen to, the guys from DeepMind, you know, very smart, talking about folding proteins. They know what else other people are doing. Does it so one day that, you know, the computer's done this? Oh, fucking hell. Sorry. Or is it so like, oh, yeah, that's just 2 months better than we thought, or it's 3 months earlier? So I don't know. I don't think we'd tell the whole story. Mm. And the things that we're seeing are interesting, are exciting, look like they'll save lots of time and money, but nothing yet that's sort of going to change anyone's life.
Yeah.
You're speaking to a lot of leaders, hearing from a lot of brands and businesses. What's got people talking? What's got people worried at the moment?
What's got people talking is the ability, it looks like you can save money and time from this. So here the Klarna, I'm firing all my people.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't need them anymore. Yeah. And then 3 months later, I'm hiring them all back again. It doesn't quite work like that. Yeah. So there's all efficiencies. I think people fear the idea, it's almost a religious thing, something's going to come along and take over. And they've all heard these horrible stories, like the paperclip story, you know, to maximise output of paperclips, you have to annihilate the human race because they're getting in the way. So I think people are sort of like, sit between, you know, there's a modest benefit, which looks like save some money. Great, we'll bank that, we'll have that. And then this existential thing, is life over in 10 years' time because the computer's going to be in charge?
Mm. You won't mind me saying it. So you write an incredible newsletter for the people listening to this who don't know, called Fix. It lands in your inbox every Friday morning. I mean, it's the best thing that's been in my inbox for the last few years. Generally salivate as it sort of comes in. You've talked recently about some of the big consultancies, McKinsey, Accenture, etc. They've had it pretty good for a while. AI feels like it not eating their lunch so much, but it's certainly knocking on the door. Where do sort of consultancies embracing this? Because I guess AI could potentially do a lot of what they do.
I think they're embracing it. There's a story that I think it was Accenture banked, you know, millions of dollars of fees for advising people about AI.
Yeah.
So they're doing quite well. Telling me this is what's coming down the track. This is what you need to do. He's very consultant. You know, this is the time. Told me by your own watch. if you talk to McKinsey, most of what they do is PowerPoints. You know, 400-page PowerPoints, very detailed, lots of knowledge. That's all being put into their own LLM. You don't need to remember with Bob, who's been around for 40 years, he remembers the Ford project from 1973. It's all now, you know, mechanized and available through AI.
Yeah.
So I think that anything that is about using knowledge and learning and looking for patterns is going to be sort of impacted. Yeah. So consultants, again, that saving money, you know, you used to pay £1 million for a consultancy gig. You can get away with paying less than that now, in theory.
Yeah.
Would you want to be a young wannabe consultant joining PwC at the moment?
No, my son came out of Oxford a couple of years ago, and I thought consulting was a great place to start because I meet so many people, very smart, amazing careers, and they all started as consultants. And you realise, because that's 10 years ago, 20 years ago from now. So now, no. You work like a doctor. You work till midnight every night.
Yeah.
You know, it's very good if you get a job on the film industry or the fashion industry. If you're on sort of dog food in Northern, it's not quite as glamorous. So long answer saying no, I don't think I would.
George's sort of latest fetish, if I can call it that,
fetish?
When it comes to AI, he's sort of loving this tech wars thing, the idea that...
The tech wars is happening!
Meta, OpenAI, Google, you know, XI, they're all kind of battling out to be number one. They've all got various different things. What's your take on maybe who's looking like they're going to sort of emerge as winners, or is it just changing so fast we really don't know?
I think the interesting thing is that the usual suspects are still there. Mm. you know, Google, we talked about this before, Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon have got so much money and so many smart people that you and I can invent the best thing ever and they just buy it. Yeah. You know, whatever. And they've proved that with AI. OpenAI is a really interesting one. So one guy has managed to power this through and, you know, compete with them. Mm. But he was partnering with Microsoft, he's now partnering with Google. That looks under some threat. The idea that Zuck rings people up, offers them $1 billion to go join them.
Still waiting for the cooler.
Well, Microsoft are ringing people as well now. So yeah. I thought, I might get a call from Microsoft. I'm not, not the first division. Yeah. But so I can't remember who it was who posted on LinkedIn. You know, there's probably about 5,000 people who are affecting this. And everyone's trying to work out if I can get them working for me at Google. Wow. Rather than my mate at Meta, you know, this is the advantage. Because it looks like the advantages are money. Everyone's got that. Yep. Compute, everyone's got that. The power stations, which everyone's not working on, is going to kill net zero. Mm-hmm. So it comes down, I need a guy or a lady who's so smart, they're going to find me somewhere, take us to the next level. So yeah. I'll pay them whatever. Because if it turns out to be the, you know, the right hire, money well spent. Turned out to be wrong. Well, earning money anyway.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And the other person didn't get to use him. Yeah. Isn't it sort of fascinating that in amongst all of that technology, the root of it comes back to people and how good the person's going
to
be.
Sorry to cut across, but Google have this thing about 10x engineers. Mm. There's people they hire as engineers. You think the people we know are coders or whatever, and it's, yeah. There are people, the 10x, these are guys who are just so brilliant and just so smart and just, you know, they can make a big change. And they've done that over the past 20 years and they're going to do it even more now.
Yeah. What's the sort of the temperature's cooled on it a little bit? You had the big Google announcement around AI mode 2-3 weeks ago. Publishers, I think, probably desperately unhappy at the start in terms of traffic and referrals. Brands and advertisers, my sense is they're sort of trying to get their head around it. What does it mean for them? Because they've sort of built assets in a way that, you know, Google goes and crawls the web and gets them. Now they're having to build stuff for OpenAI, for other things. What's the move, do you think, for Google on AI mode? There's some talk that if they can't, sort of, they're not going to cut off their own nose on this because they've got a very successful, very profitable ad model around Google search. You're not suddenly going to throw yourself under the bus whereby you either end up giving that money to someone else or don't make that money at all.
Well, Google sort of invented this, you know, with that seminal paper that started it all in 2017. The DeepMind people are sort of world leaders. You know, they've done the things with the chess and everything else from there. I think they know they've got a business model, but, you know, the regulators are sort of eating away at that as well. You would be very foolish to sort of ignore the new horse for the old horse. So I think I've got a Pixel, so I use Gemini quite a lot.
Yeah.
I think they've integrated that really well and started to find things. I think there's a whole lot of interesting stuff to be done with it. And Google are quite good at commercializing technology and making something happen with it. The Meta thing, you know, I think having, you know, AI friends you can chat to, powered by Mark Zuckerberg, is probably not what you've got in mind for the best use of AI. So I think Google, they've got a business model, they're under threat, but they know how to make money from it.
Yeah.
Everybody else is, you know, it's all come back to advertising again. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we know what Google advertising in this world looks like. It looked like search. We don't know what Meta advertising will look like when you've got, you know, your AI friend chatting to people and being their best friend. You know, we don't know how that will work yet.
Yeah, I mean, probably the same with OpenAI as well. You don't quite see how the ad model works in what it looks like at the moment in terms of ChatGPT.
But Almond was very good. We don't need the pennies from advertising because we're going to charge. You know,
he's all in on subscription
fees. Mm-hmm. I think he's realised that doesn't work. You need to find some model.
I think there's lots of people in history you can look at who have said those exact words who end up going down an ad model route.
What is that model? Well, if you were advising Sam Altman and OpenAI, what's the model for them making money?
Not avoiding the question. The first step is how do you just get people using your service? Because we've learned that it's about big numbers. You need millions of people using your service. So they're getting some way from there. You can then charge, you know, for subscriptions. I think micropayments, things like that, start to become quite interesting. If we do have this agentic AI where people are buying things through the platform, then you just take your retailer to cut 10% or whatever, or Shopify cuts, Stripe make 3.5% on everything. There's ways of doing it from there. But they will end up with an advertising model because, you know, for some reason, everyone wants to avoid it until they work out, you know, the biggest companies in the world are all funded by advertising.
Yeah.
Maybe I should join that.
we saw a few years ago, the big media giants go, TV's dead. We're going to all have our own streaming services and we're going to spend as much as it takes to get the biggest stars in the world featuring our brand new TV series directed by the biggest directors in the world. And we are sort of 10 years on, and of course the investment's still high, but a lot of these streaming services have folded or merged.
Yeah.
The spend isn't there. Do you think there's a similarity between what happened and there and what's happening right now in AI? Are we going to reach a point in a few years where these tech giants go, we can't afford to keep spending this money?
Completely agree. Yeah. If you look at Netflix, was an amazing business model. So we came up with that idea, we'll transfer from, you know, come out of the shop with the CDs to actually buy post. And streaming is a really good idea for one company. There's now a dozen or 15 people trying to do the same thing, and there's not enough money for that.
Yeah.
You know, we have our thing, we're in Disney now because it's done, so once that's finished, we'll move somewhere else.
Yeah.
You haven't got the money to do that. But if you're a venture capitalist, you think, I want to be part of it. See, food delivery services in London, they all came and went because everyone, you know, had a good idea. I don't know, but I'm going to have my stake in one in case it turns out to be a good idea and I'll own that. So AI is the same thing now. Someone's going to win out. Maybe it can be my company, so I'll put some money in.
Yeah.
At some point, someone's going to say, you know, Elon's talking about spending $7 trillion on data and power. Someone realizes at some point, these guys are running away spending somebody else's money. Mm. Let's, you know, just roll back a little bit. And Sam Altman's got a lovely ranch in Napa Valley where he lives with his husband and child. And, yeah, so if it all turns bad, you know, he's sorted. The amount of money being made doesn't justify the investments. At some point, everyone's going to sort of walk away from it, and they'll be left carrying the can for all this money that's been spent.
As when you're just talking about subscription, it made me think about, and I think it was Benedict Evans that said it, that there was proof that humans can only really cope with 11 or 12 subscriptions in their life. So you might be subscribing to your bank, to a couple of streaming services, probably got Amazon Prime. When you hit 11 or 12 as a human, one, price, you just can't sustain it, but you can't sort of justify having that many things. So something's got to go for a new thing to come in. And I think a lot of it assumes that it's just like everyone's got sort of infinite money or capability or thing to be able to do this stuff.
But I think another parallel you can draw from streaming, you know, I want to watch so-and-so. Where is it? I've no idea.
Oh, yeah.
I'll Google it. Where is it? Is it on Disney? Is it on Now? Is it on Prime? Whatever from there. Same thing happened with AI. Oh, where's the, you can do the podcast. Who's got that? Is that, Google? Is that Meta?
It's a great point.
These companies need to be better at marketing products. Mm. Benedict was very interesting on a talk I heard last week. Prompts are like spells in Harry Potter. If you don't get the prompt right, the hat falls off, or your business, your Excel spreadsheet is wrong.
Good, very good.
Yeah, the prompts, that's not going to work for people who know the language to actually write the best prompts. You need to find a button to press.
Yeah. What have you been impressed by now? I mean, I kind of assume that you're glass half full on this. I mean, you said at the start.
Well, are you? Well, that's a good question. Are you glass half full on this AI future? Or are you a bit like, I'm not sure where this is headed?
Bit of a George Butler.
I think I'm glass half full. I there's enough things that you start to see that's really interesting. And when you start to productize them, they're going to be fascinating. So my thing, VO3 from Google is fantastic. Mm. One of the things we talked about with mobile, the thing that mobile changed was the selfie. It didn't exist before you got a mobile, and people just learned that and taught themselves. You know, selfie sticks appeared on every street corner in tourist centres. You know, the selfie. What does selfie look like when you got VO3?
Yeah.
So I can, you know, every time I do my call with my mum, I've got, you know, George Clooney sat there as well with me. I don't know what the ability to play around with this stuff. There's going to be loads of interesting products to come out of it. So think back to mobile again. Everyone's got a mobile phone. Fantastic. You know, didn't think about Uber. We didn't think about Trainline. We didn't think about Deliveroo. We didn't think about, you know, all these fantastic things being enabled by that technology. And I think we're going to get, you know, if not as rich a sort of choice as we've had before, but still a decent bunch of world-changing, life-changing things from there.
What have you seen that's impressed you? What have people got right about AI?
The ability to raise money is quite, you know, staggering.
It's the thing.
The tech wars, the AI wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about something like Fix? Will we ever get an AI, Gen AI version of Fix? You're not writing it. You can just retire on the beach, feet up, you know.
If only. Because I don't want to, if I'm talking about something, I want to be sure it's right. So you read the original source article. Whatever. I don't want, you know, the AI version. Where it's, you know, most of it was right, but this one was, you know, you made a complete howler. If I get something wrong, I get very annoyed with myself. Yes, you can get it to draft an email for you, but you know, quite honestly, I can manage that, you know, still. I believe in it. I'm still waiting for it to get to the horizon so we look down on the next phase of it.
And it's sort of weird because the reason why it's so credible is because it's you and you've created it. And there's something about not just a human, but the fact that sort of Simon Andrews has done it and you sort of carry weight and all this sort of stuff. It would be sort of entirely different if a machine, even a machine that you had instructed to do it, it just feels like this. It's a different thing.
Well, this, I hesitate to use the word creativity around me writing a newsletter, but you know, the idea that AI is going to be more creative or as creative as humans have been, I just don't buy that.
I'm with you.
I don't think that the John Coltrane songs that come from a computer or the Picasso or even, you know, a lovely 1960 sports car, you know, somebody talented with proper creativity still needs to drive these things. I think you can be very efficient once you've got that creativity and do lots with it.
Yeah.
But you still feel there's room for somebody to put a human element in there.
Yeah.
Simon, before we let you go, what's one thing that you are excited about for the future with AI? What's one thing that concerns you and scares you?
Excited about that potential, you know. So clever people will come up with all fantastic things that solve problems for us and make our lives better, you know. And Uber, Deliveroo might be sort of like, you know, quite low rent version of that, but they've had an impact and made a change from there. So I think that's exciting. I worry about, you know, somebody going in the bedroom and chatting to their AI friend and having this, you know, conversation with them as if it's a real thing. So what was the movie a few years ago, Her? Where he fell in love with,
yeah.
That was a nice, positive way of looking at it, but, you know, it could go terribly wrong. And we know that, you know, there's lots of people have problems with all the social media and the terrible content that's shared. Industrializing that with your new friend is just, there's a lot of potential for it to go wrong. I don't think we can trust the people behind that to do that.
It was even more brilliant than I thought you would be. So thank you very much for joining us.
Cool guy, Simon. What an interesting man.
Yeah. And he's just, like I said, he's kind of seen it all. He's been at those big moments in technology. He's sort of seen the start of like the internet when we started building websites. He's been there when mobiles became big and everyone started building apps. He's seen social media blow up. He's sort of seen other things trickle along. I was kind of interested. I really expected him to be, you know, glass overflowing on AI, but he was a bit more balanced than I thought. He was sort of slightly almost pessimistic with some of it. He's sort of waiting to be impressed by it, I think, which surprised me a little bit.
I like that though. He's not going all in, all crazy about it. He's waiting to see the AI lay of the land and kind of see it in action and how it's going to impact us, which is a good thing. I think sometimes we do get a little bit too carried away by it. I'll tell you what I will say. Talking of glasses, cool glasses, Simon, great spectacles, good eyewear.
You need good eyewear.
Check out the socials and have a look at a video of Simon. Fantastic glasses, as well as being a super intelligent man as well. Right, I think on that note, that's all we've got time for on this week's AI Haven't a Clue. The AI Challenge will be back next week. Fear not, James. You can rest easy on your holidays and not have to be too worried about losing. A big thank you to Simon for joining us, and of course to you for listening. If you have a question and you'd like to win a mug, or perhaps you want to share with us how you've been using AI, then do drop us an email at aihaven'taclue.com. You can check out our website. You can see us on YouTube or on all the socials, and do subscribe to our Substack, please, as well. Thank you to Team AI Haven't a Clue, Molly Carter and David May. And until next time,
stay curious and send us some photos if you've got a mug.